So this was just one. So these comics. This is basically this is done by Max Tegmark. This short paper. You can then take the archive number. It's a very easy paper to read and quite nice. And there is another one, 100 Years of the Quantum by Max Tegmark and John Wehler, that I already mentioned many times. Also with some kind of discussion. And and there is also nice, because in this second paper, there is also a pool that they did. Do you believe that new physics violating the Schrödinger equation will make large quantum computer impossible? Yes, one person, 71 no, 24 undecided. And which interpretation of quantum mechanics is close to your own? Copenhagen, so standard, only 4 out of something like 100. Collapse of the wave function, so modified dynamics, only 4. Many words, Everett, 30. Bohmian, 2. Undecided, 50. So this was done in 2001.
Who was both there? Who was
asked? It was, I tell you. An informal poll taken at a conference on quantum computation at the Isaac Newton Institute in Cambridge in July 1999 gave the following results. Do you believe that all isolated systems obey the Schrödinger equation, evolves unitarily? 59 says yes, 6 no, and 31 undecided. So the question again, if we have the superposition of cats and so on. But I think what it is interesting is that the majority say for the many words, but actually the majority was undecided. So they still didn't know how to put. One should look, I'm sure that there should be some new of some kind of informal polls, because it would be interesting. And actually, this is also a community. The community was, so to say, community of quantum computation. It would be nice to see what particle physicists think, if they have an opinion on the matter, if they have one. Okay, now we go on. So we have done this. Related to this, I would like to discuss a kind of small paradox in quantum mechanics. So we have here the uncertainty relation. Okay, this is the case of the X and P. Now you know that actually, if we take the momentum L R P and we take the third component LZ, this can be written as minus I H the over the phi, where phi is the angle along the XY direction. A certain point, this is theta, and this is phi. Now, if we apply this to phi, we would have delta phi delta LZ mathematically this is LZ is just like P, because the operator P minus I H bar h bar d over the x. So if we just do the same for the commutators, we will get something like that. But we immediately realize that there is something basically wrong with that. Because delta phi, being an angle, is less than equal to pi. But then you could take the case in which delta LZ is equal to 0, or very small, you can make delta z is equal to 0. And then you have 2 pi times 0 should be larger or equal h bar. Then you would get h bar equals 0. Obviously, I did something basically wrong in that. Can one recognize where? I mean, at first, it doesn't look that bad, right? I just did the same, but it is absolutely valid. And I mean, if you use x and p or y and lz, phi and lz, mathematically, lz is just like the p, so this should be valid. But this is intrinsically limited. But then we can take this being 0, but then 0 times this is, I mean, this cannot go to infinity, and then you cannot, if this is very small, this cannot compensate for this, because it's limited. So this is just an example that shows that we have to be very careful with also with these things again. And the reason that this is not correct is that the operator phi, it is transforms a function in something which is not physical. So if you take a wave function psi in polar coordinate, let's take phi, it must be such psi of 0 equal psi of 2 pi, because you go around 1. So you go to the very same point. I mean, if you take phi, forget about r and theta. You start from here, I do one round, I come to the very same point. So the wave function is that one, cannot change. But when you consider the operator phi, and you consider the function phi times c of phi, then this is not anymore the case. For this new function here, so when you multiply by phi, then this is not anymore true, because you have 0 times c of 0, is in general different from 2 pi, psi 2 pi. So that is not anymore anymore correct. So actually, phi is not anymore, so you just break this. In other words, even the operator LZ, on the other hand, is Hermitian exactly only on the subset of functions. So this is Hermitian only when you have this. I mean, this condition is must hold. But then when you multiply by phi, you break it. So you get some crazy stuff when you do that. This is a kind of old paradox of quantum mechanics. And the reason is that actually you shouldn't write this. You shouldn't write this. So this already at this level is, so to say, wrong. Did you see it already at a certain point or not yet? In some cases it is done. Okay, so what else we will do today? I plan to still do in the last time. Two things. One, the double slit experiment. And the second, the so-called bomb, Elitzur-Weidmann bomb, which is a nice, let's say, example of peculiarities of quantum mechanics, which is also an interference example, which is also an interference, but of a peculiar type. We will see. But first, I think it is good to review the standard interference, because this is the, as Feynman said, the mother of all problems in QM. Mother of all problems, one shouldn't say it now in Germany. It has another, it has a different meaning. And by the way, by doing now the, let's say, the double slit experiments, I would also like to already say something about decoherence already at this level, that then I think I will do in much more details tomorrow, really, with showing some formula. So as usual, let's make a nice picture. We take our screen with two small slits, and then we have a second screen here where we actually see the measurement, and we have an electron or whatever particle with some momentum pi zero that a momentum, let's call it kappa now, it kappa, that goes through. And then the question is, which is the probability, for instance, to see the electron at a certain point here? Let's call this, in the center we put the zero, and this is the y-axis. The distance between the two screens, the one with the two slits and the screens where I do the measurement, I call it L. And the distance between these two small, I call it D. And now let's see so how the wave function then works. So this is actually my point P. My point P is actually, I can put here the origin of my coordinates. Actually, I'm interested, this is 0, y, 0. And so actually, so the wave function comes from two pieces. In one case, I start from slit 1 or from slit 2. And so I have two wave functions. The first wave function, so the wave function here, by taking into account the particle going through the slit 1, is psi 1 of p, and apart from some normalization, e k r 1. I also take here h bar equal 1 for simplicity in order not to have h bar around. So this is just, actually there should be some modulation, which also length depends on the distance. For the moment, let's just take the wave, the plane wave. So it comes here. So it is, of course, depends only on the distance. And this would be, this is R1. Of course, L is much larger than D as usual. Then there is also the second one. This is the, let me call delta R, the difference in the path. Actually, these two, one can take this basically as equal if this L is very large. And this is the angle theta, which is also this one, theta. So the wave function of the electron going through hole one and then hitting the screen at the point Y is given by this. But the very same thing, which be for the case in which the wave function goes through hole two. And this is n e kappa r2. And now the question is, which is the difference on the in between r1 and r2? We see that r2 is obviously longer than r1 because of this piece delta r. And actually, r2 minus r1 is equal, so this piece delta r, is equal to d times theta. Because this is d, this theta, of course, this is in the limit of small angle theta. Then, the wave function to find the particle in P, the total one, apart from some normalization, and actually, instead of P, I only varies along the y direction, so it's just a function of y for me. This is the sum. So I can factorize k r1, 1 plus kappa delta r. Okay, so this is what we have. And then, in order to know the probability, we have to take the modulus squared of this object. And this is because the probability is always the modulus squared. So and note that they are both added coherently. So we have both of them summed at the same time. So the total wave function is the sum of contribution from one plus the contribution from two. And so this is what we get. And if we square this, is apart from this n squared, this modulus of this is one squared because it's just a phase. Then we have one plus one plus e I kappa delta r plus E minus I kappa delta R. This is some factor n squared, the factor 2, 1 plus cos kappa delta R. So this is already, we see already the interference. It comes from the fact that I have both of them at the same time, and then there is this piece with the cosinus, which now can vary between minus 1 and 1. So it basically generates something of this type. Actually, if you look at here, of course, it is not true that this is smaller than this because I just took the plane wave. For that, you need a modulation of the distance. But so this, it just gives the fact that we have some minima and some maxima. And of course, the minima are given by, so where you have the zero, where the particle will never go, this is kappa delta R equal to, where is it? Moment, I'm lost. Okay, we can do it. 2n plus 1 pi. Right? Yeah, because cos pi is minus 1, and this goes to 0. And then you can go to 3 pi, minus pi, and so on. And then you get a 0. And delta r, of course, we did it already. This is d theta. But this is also equal to d and theta. So y is equal l times theta, so this is y over l. So you can reformulate it as function of y. So you find that the minima are for y equal l over kappa d 2n minus 1 pi. So these are the minima. So this would be epsilon 1, epsilon 2, and so on and so forth. And this is the standard interference of quantum mechanics. Of course, this is just wave again. But when we interpret this as a probability distribution, we know that we will find the particle with zero probability in this point and with very small probability around them, and with very large probability in the middle, or where there is the maxima and so on. So this is the double slit interference with wave function, where we take into account that we have a coherent sum of two pieces of the wave wave function, in which one piece comes from the left, from hole number one, and one from hole number two. And the particle went through two slits at the same time, and we have to do a coherent sum of those. So this is what we have. But already at this level, and this is something that probably you have seen it already, or if you didn't see, you already could definitely follow, because it is rather intuitive. Suppose that we would like to measure where the particle has gone through. So we have now a detector that, let's put it, for instance, after here, close to hole 2. We put a detector which see if the, for instance, if the electron went through hole 2. Okay, so now there is not only the electron goes through and this sum, there is also a detector which tries to see. And let's assume that the detector has some pointer, for instance. It is like that. It points to the center. And if it sees the particle go through 2, it changes its state and it goes directly to, just switch it to this. So let's see how then the discussion changes when we put a detector into the game. And we will see that the disappearance of the interference. There is no we try to see through which of the two slits the particle went through, we kill the interference, and this is something very typical, and one can see it already at this level. Then, so we try now to see. So let me just do a second sketch of the very same stuff with the detector. So the detector can either It has a pointer. Let's do a, it is not digital. Let's do a very, really old pointer. It point either to one, so when there is nothing, or it point to two. So it goes like when the particle goes here, it doesn't, it's not switched on, nothing. But when you see the particle going to two, it just goes to that. So we have either one or two, depending on the fact. So now, this would be the cat state, as before, in which we have the superposition of the detector into different states, one in which it doesn't move, and one in which it moves. But so what does it mean exactly? So the total wave function is much more complicated now. This is the wave function psi1y when the electron goes through to the first hole here, and then it propagates up to the point y on the screen. Okay, I need more space. Times the wave function of the detector pointing one. So that actually didn't move in that case. This is some complicated wave function of an object in which this means that this arrow, this macroscopic object, point direction one. And note that n is a gigantic number. This is an Avogadro number. But doesn't matter, we can write this wave function. Second, psi2y, and then we have the same, but now the when the electron goes through, this is again one, and this is a two, as it is written there. When it goes here, the detector switches, makes kind of click, it moves, the pointer moves. And then the wave function of this pointer going to direct, showing direction, that direction too. It is a completely different wave function, which I write like that. Okay, these are the n particles inside. The first particle has position x1, the second x2, and the last one xn. And of course, they are microscopically different, but in one case like this, the other like that. So in the one case, the first particle, let's say on the very top, let's put that here is x1, the atom corresponding to that. In one case, it's a kind of Gaussian picked here. In the other case, it's picked in a completely different position. And now, well, if we ask which is the probability that the electron is somewhere, our original electron is on the point y. Well, we should again take the psi dot squared. But now it doesn't depend on you. Why? It depends also on the positions of all the atoms of the detector. Let's see what it is. This is psi1y squared. And then there is the first detector, the first wave function of the detector squared. Then there is psi2y squared phi2. Xn squared, and then there are still the double products. There is still the interference, of course it is there, but it will be plus C1 star y, phi1 star x1 xn times C2 y phi2 x1 xn plus the Hermitian conjugate of this, okay. I don't rewrite it. I mean, the one where you put the star here and there is no star there. Now look closer at this. I mean, before this was exactly the term, this one and that one, which gave me the cosinus here. So we had 1 plus 1 plus this piece, which comes exactly from the double products, which was this one. So if you could neglect the wave function of the detector, or the wave function of the detector would be equal, so it doesn't measure anything, you could take it out, and then you get again the interference. But now you have, when the detector is really doing the measurement, these are completely different functions, and their product is basically zero. So the product of this and this, I mean, you can let's take the first atom, the one on the top of the arrow. In one case, let's take only one direction. Yeah. Let's say phi 1 x 1 squared. In one case, this is the function, and when it is this is phi 1, and then we have here it is phi 2 x 1 squared. Of course, the same should be redone for all the other atoms that you have an Avogadro number of them. But already when you take only one, if we have a macroscopic displacement of the of that pointer, already for the single atom this product is basically zero, because either this is large and the other is zero, or vice versa. Actually, this is such a small number that it is very, it's so small that it is, for all practical purposes, is zero. So the product of this times this is zero. By the way, even if you would consider that the product of these two wouldn't be zero, but would be even 0.99 or whatever, when you have many of them, so even if you would take into account a very small displacement, but the overlap is not really zero, but when you have even a kind of consistent overlap, but you multiply this by a very large number, this is again basically zero, when L is very large. So this is, actually it is zero for two reasons. First, because actually for a microscopic displacement, even for a single atom of the detector, you get basically zero. But on top of that, you multiply this very small number at the power of n. So you get, I mean, once I did an estimate, so you get something, 10 at the minus, I forgot something. It is so small that you can even not quantify it. Aha, so for instance, even you take 0.99 at the Avogadro number, so just to get an example, so even when for the single atom you have a big overlap, and Avogadro, this is 10 at the minus 10, 21. So you can forget it. For a single, this is for, but this is when you have a big overlap. It's not, in that case, this is already zero by itself, so you shouldn't have 0.99. You should have 0.00001 at the power of, so you get still some extra power here. So this is, so basically you can, with full safety, neglect the double products. So, and we didn't use any collapse yet. We are just writing the wave function of the system. So you get, to a very good approximation, psi 1 y squared, phi 1 x 1 squared, this I can erase, plus psi 2 y squared, phi 2 x1, etc., squared. The interference disappeared completely. No interference. So when we try to see with which slit it goes through, we completely neglect it. Of course, we could still integrate over the detector here. If we integrate over the detector, so because we don't care where the detector positions are, integrate over x1, xn, you really get psi1y squared plus psi2y squared. No interference. Do you agree? But this is, actually, this is something that one could do also, according to me, in a quantum mechanic course, because actually, I even didn't use, I mean, you can do it even in classical, I mean, what is it, in the orthodox interpretation of quantum mechanics. I can use the collapse at the very end here, but, I mean, even by not applying the collapse, I took the detector is in some superposition, which is a kind of many words, even if I don't state it here. But then I see that these two words are completely independent one from each other. You already see why. This is actually a first example of the coherence. So the two words, particle going to slit one and detector measuring that, or through slit two and detector measuring that, are completely decohered. They just evolve in their own branch. And this branch don't touch each other anymore. And this is really that this superposition is basically zero. Of course, how this happens, this doesn't happen instantaneously. The detector originally points over one only, and then either moves to two or doesn't. So this one should actually put some time dynamics, and this is what we will do actually tomorrow and at a certain point even later. Then the question is, if there is a limit, how can do, so to say, interference? Interference with one electron, so when you don't have any detector, is easy. You can also put atoms. There was also this fulleren, which is a kind of big molecules. To my knowledge, with the record, I do not know if it was beaten. I should check. I checked, I didn't find it. Is this one? Is the interference with this kind of molecules? So these are big objects with a kind of big molecules that they got really, they really do a kind of double slit experiment. So they just go to two different, and you really see. So in that case, you don't have only one, point-like particle. You have many of them, but they still go through, and you still can maintain the interference. You still see the double product for that. But it is very difficult. So the larger it gets, the more difficult it is to keep it in. But when you put a macroscopic objects, then you kill it. Okay. So this is the, let's say, double slit experiment plus interference interaction with the environment, and first look at the coherence. And the other thing that I would like to do still today, then I think is enough, is this bomb. Who has already heard about the Elitzur-Weidmann bomb? Not yet. Okay, good. Then we get something new. So the idea is the following. Suppose that you have why we use the bomb is completely useless, just because it is nice, but we could use whatever. Suppose that we have some bombs. Some of them are real bomb which can explode, and some of them are so-called dulls. They cannot explode, they are fake bombs. And suppose they are triggered by a photon. They are triggered by a photon. And now let's suppose the following, that actually these detectors, we can also detector that triggers the explosion. We can also think that they don't destroy the photon, that the photon goes through, it doesn't matter. So if the bomb is fake, the photon simply goes through, does nothing to the photon. If the bomb is true, we can even think that the photon goes through, but the bomb explodes at the same time. Okay? Now the question is, how can I, and you have a box full of bombs which look exactly equal. Now the question is, how can you distinguish among the fake bombs and the real bombs? Of course you can say, I take one bomb, I shoot an electron, if it is real, it explodes. If it is fake, it doesn't explode. So then the situation is solved. But you would like to know if a bomb is real without making it explode. So this is the key. This is more difficult. Because if you shoot a photon, you of course, okay, it doesn't explode, the bomb is fake. It explodes, the bomb is real, but you lost the bomb. So how can I how can I be sure, at least in some cases, that the bomb is a real bomb, but I don't make it explode? It seems impossible at the beginning, but it is possible with quantum mechanics. And this is what we see now. Of course, why do I use a bomb? There is, again, I can use whatever. I can use a detector, the triggering of a detector or not. It's not necessary. Simply that the bomb gives an idea of something, a very big reaction to a small, small particle that causes something, a very big outcome if it explodes. And by the way, this kind of bomb setup that I'm going to discuss was realized not with real bombs, but with similar, equivalent setup experimentally by the group of Anton Zeilinger in Vienna. So it is something that it was realized. In order to see what it is a bomb, let's first tell, I would like to tell you what is a Mach-Zehnder interferometer. So we have simply some kind of half mirror. Here one half mirror one. Here we have half mirror two. Then we have some standard mirror. Standard mirror. Well, let's put it here. And then we have detector one here and detector two. Okay? And now let's suppose that we have a photon in this direction that comes. We don't care about the polarization of the photon. We just care about the direction. So the photon comes in the direction, let's call it x and y. So the photon comes in the direction x. It goes through half mirror one. And a half mirror, put it into a superposition, 1 over square root of 2, x plus y. So basically, the photon takes this way and this way at the same time. Now, if you don't put this electron here, this second half mirror, let's see what happens. First, we have the mirrors, M1, M2, the standard mirrors. Here we have mirror 1 and mirror 2. This is then switched because of this mirror to y plus x. Yeah, because x, the direction, goes to y, and y is going to x. This is trivial. But then if we don't have this, what we will see? So our wave function is this. Well, 50% of the cases, so without half mirror 2, 50% of the cases, D1 makes click. And in 50% of the cases, D2 makes click. Right? This is simple. But let's now include width. Half mirror 2 with the second half mirror. Then we should take into account that also y is transformed. Then and how? One part of y goes here and one part goes here. And for this is the same. But an half mirror of the type, for x it does like that, and for y we can assume that it does the following. It must be a unitary transformation. It does this. Okay? So if you come with x, it gets x plus y. If you come with y, you get y minus x. It is still 50-50. It's just a different phase. And you cannot put everyone plus because it has to go to orthogonal state to that. It's a unitary transformation. A half mirror is a unitary transformation on your original photons. Okay, but then let's apply the second half mirror here. So we get 1 over square root of 2. 1 over square root of 2, then the y go to minus x plus y, plus 1 over square root of 2, the x is going again to x plus y. You can see that the x part, this is not inside, this is here. You get y. So basically, what it happens, the photons comes in, it goes through both directions. Here, the wave functions get together, and then it goes only up. And then you get only D2 makes click. This is an interference. This is just an interference. It's just an interference as the one of the double slit, simply that we have two outcomes, D1 and D2. And when we have interference, D1, in this case, D2, so 0% D1 made click, and 100% D2 makes click. So this is just an interference experiment. The only difference is that we just have two outcomes instead of in infinity. So it is even easier, but it is the same, absolutely the same idea of having an interference. between different paths. Okay, and then one may say, okay, fine, nice. But what does it mean now for the bomb? Now we come back. But the first point is that, you see, if you don't have the second mirror, it is easy. You may say, okay, the first mirror gives me 50% here or 50% here, and then either I here click here and here, everything looks fine. But if you put the second mirror, you really have to admit that the photon went through both ways, because otherwise how can they recombine to know I go there up only? So the wave function or whatever you call it really went through both. By the way, you can decide to put the second mirror even after the photon went through the first. So where actually, naively, you should already taken the decision and go this way or the other. No, the wave function really goes through. So you can, if this is very large, you can put this even later. And still, then you will have the click only in the two and not in the one. Okay. Mm-hmm. Fine. Now let's see what happens with the bomb. So we have to put the bomb somewhere along the. Let's put it here. So here we have the bomb, and here there is the detector. Actually, the detector should be exactly in the middle. And here is the bomb. Yeah. And then the question is, what happens in these particular cases? Well. One can already see that in 50% of cases, when the photon takes this wave, let's first do it simply. So 50% of cases, the bomb explodes if it is real. So let's say a real bomb. Right? In 50%, it explodes. In 50% of cases, it takes the other way. So the bomb doesn't explode. Then it goes up. But then you have only the X path that goes through. Then you have 25% of click in the one and 25% click in the two. 25% click the one and 25% click in the two. Now the question is the following. When you hear the click in the two, you don't have really big information. Because if the bomb is fake, so fake bomb, a fake bomb is like having no bomb. It just leaves the photon through. There is nothing that takes place. So what you basically have, you have only D2 click with 100%. Because it is exactly like this one here. But then, so when the bomb is fake, you just have D2 click. So when you have a real bomb, in 25% of the cases, you will hear a click in D2, no explosion. So in both cases, no explosion. But you still do not know if the bomb is true or if the bomb is fake. But in 25%, when the click is in D1, you know this one, exactly this one, bomb, real, no explosion. So in 1/4% of cases, you can save the bomb without making it explode. And this is when you hear clicking the one that you wouldn't have for the real bomb, but still, naively, so the photon took this way, then it went up, then it went to the one, and the real bomb stayed here without explosion. But then you know that the bomb is real without making it explode. And this is, if you want, it is a kind of zero measurement, of null measurement is called. I understand that this is tricky, so it is good to think again, to think also a bit alone about this, because it is somehow the first time you say, oh, how is it possible? But it's absolutely fine. There is no trick of whatsoever. So a null measurement, which is related to this, let's see. Oh, it is null measurement. Suppose that we have, again, a photon, which goes along the direction x. And here we have a half mirror, a beam splitter. And then let's say we put the detector only here. So the detector is there. So now you can see that the wave function again goes through the mirror 1/2 x plus y. Then we do the measurement. If d makes click, then it is clear that the state is y, and this will be 50%. If d makes no click, we also have a collapse of the wave function. Because if d makes no click, it means that the photon went along this direction. So you have a result of a measurement where the detector didn't change at all. But still, you have the collapse of the wave function. Because there is no other possibility. Because the no click is an information that the path was this one. And this is exactly related to what the bomb does. Because the bomb is doing a null measurement. Because it doesn't change at all its status. But it tells us through which state the photon is going. Yes? Then it's lost. This is 50% of cases.
Yeah, but then there is no click in the detector in the end because the photon has to interact with the bomb.
Yeah, you can also have some non-invasive measurement where the photon simply goes through, but still it...
Come on, this is not possible. You always have a change of the wave function if you have an interaction.
Not necessarily. You have some, you can keep the, you can have that. This was done in some experiment by Vineland. You can have that. But it doesn't matter. If you see, actually I didn't write here clicks or no click. You have the explosion of the bomb, that's full enough. So it doesn't matter. You can even assume that the photon is absorbed by the bomb. It's OK. You have the explosion of the bomb. That's more than enough to know.
But then the second assumption doesn't prove any problem.
Which one?
But then it doesn't follow that you have the click in D1
or D1. This follows. This follows. But here, there is no interaction, but you know where the bomb is there. Yeah, because this is like having the photon goes here. I mean, if you think classically that it took here the decision to go here, which is not true, but let's think in these simple terms, it never touches the bomb. But somehow, yes, because we carry the information. Because if there is no bomb or there is a fake bomb, then you have only in the 2 click, never in the 1. But when the bomb is there, and real bomb, and the photon goes here, sometimes you have click in the 1/4% of cases. And in those cases, we know that the bomb is there without touching it. Is it okay? I mean, maybe what I do now, I write down the wave function. When we have a real bomb, I write down the wave function so that we can see better. Because now I just did it in the following way, but I would like to also to do it more rigorously. So we start with x. Then we have our half mirror 1, this one down. And we put our state in 1/2 x plus y. But then we can do the following. Then we have put the bomb here. So this goes into 1/2 x bomb not exploded, so the state of the bomb not exploded, plus y bomb exploded. Because now also the bomb is part of the game. So actually here we can also put the bomb is there, the bomb is non-exploded here, but then it changes into non-exploded or exploded, depending if the photon is in this state or this state. It's again entanglement, as the detector before, absolutely the same. Then what do we have? Then we have the second half mirror. Okay, this is trivial. This is x becomes y. The second mirror. Mirror 1 and mirror 2. These trivial mirrors that just change the direction. Plus x bomb exploded. And then we have the half mirror 2, which put back. So 1/2 the y was going in minus x x plus y bomb non-exploded plus 1/2 is already there, so x plus y bomb exploded. Actually, if the bomb explodes and we have the absorption, then you don't have even the photon anymore, so you can even take this piece away. If we assume that the photon is still there, which is possible, then you have something like this. But then you see what happens. I mean, in 50% of cases, so 1/4 plus 1/4, the bomb explodes. So that, but you have the information that the bomb explodes, no problem. But in 50% of cases, the bomb doesn't explode. And in among these 50, the half goes to x and the half to y, the half the detector 1 and the half in detector 2. And then you can save 25% of bombs. But you can repeat this. You can go farther. Let's say, how many bombs can we save? Well, suppose that we remember that we have the following information. In 25%, the bomb explodes, and we know that it is a the bomb doesn't explode, and we know that it is a real bomb. But in 25%, it is undecided because we had the click in D2. So in that case, we didn't know, is the bomb real or no? We have no information on that yet. But we can take the 25% of bomb and redo the experiment, reput it back. So the number of bombs that we can save is 1/4 from the first run, plus 1/4 of 1/4. This is the second run, and so on and so forth. If you go on and you do this time, you get 1/3. So you can save 33% of the bombs. This is what you can do. Indeed, you can even go farther, and this is the last thing that I will say today. You can even change the half mirror in such a way to save almost, in the limit, half of the bombs. You can even reach this. This is the limit. You cannot save more than the half. But half is possible. By changing this setup in the following form, you have to assume that the half mirror do something different. Let me do this. So basically, the setup stays the same. Where is it? Here. The setup stays the same, but we just change this. So when it goes to this half mirror, instead of getting 1/2 square root of x plus y, that it is exactly, so 50-50, we assume something slightly different, so a different transparency coefficient. We have something like cos x plus sinus y. Well, c is cosinus of a certain angle theta, and s is a sinus of a certain angle theta. Of course, when you take 45 degrees, you go back to the original case that I had before. But then, if you do like that, the transformation of y, you should have here minus sinus plus cosinus x. This is just the same as before. I just changed the coefficients. Basically, if you take a theta which is very small, you can assume, so it basically goes straight with very high probability for a small theta. And with very small probability, it bends in the other direction. But the idea is exactly the same. If you do the calculation through the both, again, of the same stuff, you will find again that the click only in D2. I leave it as a small exercise. It's just going on the transformation, x to the first, then the mirror, then again the same, then you will find that basically along the direction y, you get sine squared plus cosine squared. And then you have to click on ED2. But again, you can put the bomb. And now you can see that the bomb, so when does it explode? With probability sine squared, the bomb explode. Because if I put the bomb and then it goes up, it explodes. With probability cosine squared, it does not explode because basically it takes this way. But then I have to measure, to calculate which is the probability to have the click here and the click here. I just write the result, which is a similar calculation. And so let me write a kind of table maybe. So my probability sine squared the bomb explode, probability cos squared the bomb, the real bomb, does not explode. But then, out of this cosine squared, we would have some which will go there up. And this you will have cosine squared times cosine squared. You have indeed two click. And this is, so to say, a bad information. This doesn't tell you. You do not know if the bomb is real or not. Because if it is a fake bomb, it would make click in D2 anyhow. But with probability cosine squared sine squared, so basically cos squared, sine squared, it makes click in D1. So bomb real, no explosion. This is what you care. And of course now it is the same as before. Of course if we put theta equal 45 degree, so we get here 1/4. So 1/2 times 1/2, exactly as before. Now the question is, what if you take a different theta? You may think that if you take a theta equal basically zero, well, it is true that the explosion of the bomb is very improbable because it is sine squared, and if theta is small, this is very small. But it's also true that the probability that we have the click in D1, which is what we want, because in that case we know that the bomb is real and doesn't explode, is also very small because it's against S squared. So in the vast majority of cases, you will have cos to the 4, which is basically 1. So you will simply have click in D2 and you have no information. But you can repeat again the experiment many, many times, and then you will get the probability that because you know, in that case, you, at least in cos at the power 4 of cases, you hear the click in D2. You don't have the explosion, but you still do not know if the bomb is real or not. But then you can repeat again, as I said. So in the first run, cos squared squared is the probability that the bomb doesn't explode, and you know it because you have click in D1. But then you take cosinus at the power of 4 of bomb, and you redo the same. So cos squared squared. And you go on and so and you just do this. If you do this sum, which is a geometric sum, you get cos squared divided 1 plus cosine squared. If you take theta very small, theta goes to 0, this is basically 1/2. And you can save 1/2 of the bomb, but it takes very long time. Because at a single measurement, I mean, after a single, if theta is very small, you have to, at a single run, the probability that you will save the bomb, you will know that this bomb is real, is very small. But if you repeat it very long, then you can save up to 1/2. Yes?
I think I read some time ago that there's a possibility to make the experiment ever more complicated, and that way you can increase the percentage.
Even more than 1/2?
Yeah.
It can be, I'm not aware. I mean, with this setup, you can go up to 1/2. I do not exclude that you can find some more refined tricks to go beyond that. But I'm not aware right now about this. I mean, with this setup, by changing these probabilities, you go up to 1/2, but by requiring very long time. Because in 0.5% of cases, I mean, you will, at the end, you will lose. But if you find the paper, I would be very interested. Yes?
You might be able to make the whole setup just between mirror 2 and half mirror 1 again.
decided there again. That might be to make it more complicated. I think that seems like that might be the way.
How exactly?
So if you make a second Mach-Zander interferometer in between half mirror one and half mirror two. No, half mirror one and mirror two.
Ah, I do not know. I should then check the math,
yeah,
how it goes. Because, I mean, in the end, we can really do calculation to see the probability, and I do not know what... I would suspect it is something more complicated than only this, that you would need something more.
Unfortunately, I don't remember the details.
Uh-huh. No, but I think, okay, I will Google it later. Maybe I find it. If I find it, I will tell you tomorrow. But, of course, I mean, as I said again, the idea... So why bomb? Or not, this is just because it's funny. But it is absolutely not necessary to use bombs. But it is, so to say, interesting on its own. You can use something else. And this was done in experiments, as I said. So actually today, for today, I think that, yeah, it's good time to stop. So I can tell you what we'll do tomorrow. So tomorrow, my plan is to do decoherence in more details, really with a model of decoherence, and then the Bell inequalities. And the Bell inequalities are a bit hard and require some work, but one can do, I would say, a simple as possible without simplifying it too much, because one has to go through that. Okay, are there questions? If I do not see other questions concerning the bombs and so on, we meet tomorrow. Thank you.